I finished my probation for 7 years, and also I paid for the restitutions. Why I still be deported?
How am I going to manage all of these things that are facing me right now? Robbie's in detention, bills to pay, food, just day-to-day living. How am I going to manage this with Robbie not here?
Where am I going to live? My husband's from Guyana, and I'm from Trinidad. If you want to deport him, where's going to be our new home? Where is home? Because you're splitting my family right now. My husband's in jail. I'm here. And what's going to happen with us? Where do I go from there?
Welcome to Melting the Ice, Derritiendo el Hielo, a bilingual radio series dedicated to sharing stories of how U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement is impacting families across the U.S., unpacking how the system works and who is profiting, and to sharing information and strategies about how people are fighting back. We hope this radio broadcast will reach people currently inside ICE detention centers. If you are listening right now from detention, we want to send you our special greetings, our love, solidarity, and respect. We want you to know that you are not alone, and that there are people out here fighting for you and with you. You can write us at Melting the Ice, P.O. Box number 202981, New Haven, Connecticut, 06520. Again, that's Melting the Ice, P.O. Box number 202981, New Haven, CT 06520. We would love to know if you are listening and what information would be most useful for you. Bienvenidos y bienvenidas a Derritiendo el Hielo, una serie de radio dedicada a compartir historias de cómo el sistema de inmigración está impactando a familias en todos los Estados Unidos, desarmando los mecanismos del sistema actual, quién se beneficia y compartiendo información y estrategias de cómo la gente está luchando. Soy su anfitrión, Luis Luna, y gracias por acompañarnos. Esperamos que esta transmisión de radio llegue a las personas que actualmente se encuentran en los centros de detención de ICE. Si está escuchando ahora desde detención, queremos enviarle nuestros saludos especiales, nuestro amor, solidaridad y respeto. Queremos que sepan que no están solos y solas y que hay personas que luchan por usted y con usted. Nos pueden escribir a Derritiendo el Hielo, P.O. Box número 202981, New Haven, CT 06520. Otra vez, Derritiendo el Hielo, P.O. Box número 202981, New Haven, CT 06520. Nos encantaría saber si está escuchando y qué información sería la más útil para usted. Al final de este episodio, transmitiremos el segmento en español. Sigan con nosotros. My name is Luis Luna. I'm an organizer, activist, radio programmer, and immigrant. I moved to the U.S. from Ecuador when I was 13 years old, and I've been part of the immigrant rights movement for over 10 years. I've seen how immigration, detention, and deportation is impacting my community. And while the U.S. mainstream media focuses overwhelmingly on Mexican and Central American immigrants, we know that ICE targets Black and Brown immigrant communities from around the world, not only the Latinx community. In this episode, we share the story of Tony Chen. Tony is a restaurant manager in New York City. He's the father of three young New Yorkers, a husband and loved community member. Tony was born in China, and he's a lawful permanent resident, aka he has a green card. But a few years ago, Tony was ripped apart from his family for something he had done in the past. In the summer of 2015, 7 years after committing a nonviolent financial crime, and shortly after completing 5 years of probation, immigration officials suddenly appeared on Tony's doorstep at the crack of dawn. They plucked him from his home and family and placed him in immigration detention. He was sent to the Bergen County Jail in Hackensack, New Jersey, for pending deportation proceedings. Tony was shocked that a crime he had already atoned for, a crime for which he had received no jail time, could now place him in detention and threaten to break his family apart. In a minute, we will hear Tony tell his story in his own words.
So as soon as they sent me to the Bergen County Jail, and then, you know, during so many hours, I talked to the other people at that time. They were so surprised. They said, "You don't even have a 1 day in the jail. How come they deport you?" You know, I don't know how to describe it. Just at that time, I just feel like I'm going to lose anything.
But first, some background. Because Tony's story is now unique, what happened to Tony must be traced back to immigration laws passed in 1996 under the Clinton administration that radically changed how the U.S. immigration system operates today. The 1996 immigration bill, called the Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act, or IRA-IRA for short, made more people vulnerable to detention and deportation than ever before. Prior to 1996, documented immigrants convicted of certain crimes could face deportation. But under the new laws, Congress drastically expanded the definition of what counts as an aggravated felony, making one eligible for deportation. And it made these changes retroactive. All of a sudden, people who had already paid the price for a crime committed years or even decades earlier, including people who had never even been sentenced to serve jail or prison time through the U.S. criminal justice system, were now eligible for deportation. In short, these laws have had the effect of making detention and deportation a new additional penalty for immigrants who have had even relatively minor contact with the U.S. criminal justice system. Organizers and legal experts see the 1996 laws as the beginning of our current crimmigration system, a system that, alongside the growth of U.S. prison system, has exploded the number of people incarcerated in the U.S. today. This new system also allows local law enforcement agencies to enforce federal immigration laws, thoroughly enmeshing these two systems, our immigration system and our criminal justice system, in new and unprecedented ways. And yet, despite this connection, deportation is considered a civil, not criminal proceeding. This means that people held in ICE detention centers facing deportation do not have the right to a government-appointed attorney. And, in most cases, they are not able to post bail. They are also not given a sentence, but are placed in custody indefinitely, primarily housed in U.S. jails and prisons. And most must stay there for months or even years in order to fight their case and resist deportation. It wasn't always like this. Before the 1996 laws, deportation was a relatively rare occurrence, but what was once considered extreme has now become routine. In 1996, before IRA-IRA was signed into law, the United States deported 70,000 immigrants. After its passage, this number quickly quintupled, ballooning to over 400,000 in 2012 alone, under the Obama administration. And in our current political climate of extreme anti-immigrant sentiment and ever-expanding budgets for border security and U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, these old laws are now being enforced at higher and higher rates, impacting more and more families. For Tony, these laws were triggered when, after completing his probation, he took a trip out of the country to Canada to attend his nephew's graduation. It was this trip, leaving the U.S. and re-entering the U.S., that caused ICE agents to show up at his doorstep. Once Tony was detained in the Bergen County Jail, he faced an impossible choice: to stay in detention indefinitely, passively for years, in order to take the chance on fighting his case, during which time he would be unable to work and provide for his family, or to take an order of deportation, leaving his wife and three children behind in the U.S. This is the impossible choice that thousands of families in the U.S. are facing every day. Our producer, Sylvia Ryerson, talked to Tony to learn more about his story and how he navigated this decision.
Okay, well, Tony, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And to begin, would you just introduce yourself and tell us where you live?
My name's Ken Wen Chen, and also called Tong Li Chen. I live in New York, in Brooklyn, Avenue U. I was born in Guangzhou, China in 1969.
And tell me a little bit about your journey here to the United States. How old were you when you first came here, and where did you first live?
I came to United States on 1999. I was 28 years old. And the first place is in Chinatown. I live with my parents-in-law. And then when my wife came with my son, and I moved to Brooklyn. And since then, I live in Brooklyn area until now.
So how many years have you lived here in the United States?
Until now, it's 20 years.
How old was your son when he came?
He was almost 5 months. Yeah, he was born in May, and then they came in September. So, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your family. I know you have two other children, too. And how old are they now?
Yeah, I have three children. Jinming is my son. He's the elder one. And then the second is Captain Chen. She's 18 now, and then she's studying at LaGuardia Art High School. She's going to graduate this year and go to the college next year. And then my youngest daughter is Kelly Chen, and she's 16 now, and she's studying in Monroe High School. My wife, Tracy Chen, she is a teacher assistant right now. And yeah, that's all my family now.
So can you take us back to 2008 and what happened with your original case?
Okay, and before I received a sentence, took 2 years. I was arrested on 2008. I plead guilty. I finally received my sentence. It's a 5 years probation. And I also have a restitution. Then they allow me to pay that money in these 5 years. And I agree that, so I pay. I finished the 5 year probation in a very good condition, and then I paid registration before I finished my probation. So that means this case, only for this case, is 7 years. My probation finished, and then I thought, my case is done, and then I'm free now. You know, the federal and the state gave me a letter to say, oh, your probation is finished, you are good, in good conditions. Then I thought, oh, okay, my case is fully done. So I back to normal, I do my job, you know. So I'm working hard, and I work for my full-time job. And also I work for the community too, because I'm trying to do more things to replace what I did want before. So I thought I'm going to start my new life. Then it's on August 26th. Then it's in the morning, a couple police, you know, they wear the police uniforms, and they come lock my door in the morning, and they say, I didn't open the door. I asked them, you know, through the door, and then they say, oh, what happened? And then they say, oh, Mr. Chen, do you have a car? And I say, yeah, I have a car. And then, do you know where is your car? I say, yeah, I just parked the car in front of my house, you know, yesterday night. And then they say, oh, can you point which car is yours? You know, at the first, they just say they are police. They didn't say they are ICE. So I don't know, oh, maybe there's a, you know, police doing their research. And then I open the door and tell them, oh, my car's over there. Then they said, oh, we are the ICE. We are going to arrest you. Then.
What time in the morning was it?
It's 6 o'clock in the morning. And then, but I don't know, you know, at those time I just, you know, feel like, oh, my God. My wife came down and then asked the officer, because one of the officers, he's a Korean, I think, but he can speak Mandarin. And then he explained to my because my wife just so scared, and then say, oh, what happened? And then They said, oh, they, don't worry, we just need Mr. Chen to our office to ask some questions and then fill up the documents. Then he will go home soon. So at the moment, then I said, oh, maybe, okay, it's fine. But, you know, one thing is a very ridiculous is when I ask for change my clothes, then they say okay, but they cannot let me, they don't let me use the bathroom. They say you just you know, change your clothes in front of them. Yeah.
In your own house.
Yeah, in the living rooms. Then okay, then we. So then after I went to the office on Federal Plaza 26, they asked me to sign all the paper. But at that time, I thought, oh, okay, fine. Then finally, then when I after I signed all the paper, then they told me that, oh, you against the, you know, you against the federal law, and then we are going to deport you. Then they said, right now you can call your lawyer, you can hire a lawyer, then, but we are going to send you to the detention center. So that's the story, yeah.
So that very day, they took you to Bergen,
yeah,
County Jail?
Yeah. It's in the midnight. First, they sent me to, they sent us to the transport center in Midtown, and then in the midnight, they sent me to Bergen.
That same day.
Yeah, same day.
So at that moment in your life, it had been 7 years since your offense, and you'd already served 5 years of probation, and you'd paid restitution, and you had thought that that case was closed. Did you ever imagine that this would happen?
No. 1,000% I never imagined, because... you know, since I started my probation, I have to report to the probation office, the federal probation officer, every week, one time a week. Then she talked to me. She keep asking me, said, "What happened, Mr. Chen? You are doing well. You have a job. You report tests. You don't against the traffic law. Why they take so long to give you a judgment?" And also, I don't receive any jail time, because at that moment I know if I receive a jail time over a year, it would affect my immigration status. Because you know, people keep telling me, say, if you receive a sentence over 365 days in the jail, then you are going to lose your green card. So at that point I said, oh, okay, fine. 5 years probation, it's okay. You know, I don't receive any jail time. It's much better. So.
Right. So importantly, you were never sentenced to serve any jail time for that offense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then that day at midnight, you wind up in the Bergen County Jail.
Yeah, so that's why I feel just, you know, the worst, you know, my life. I said, oh, okay. I know. At that moment, I know, oh, my God, I'm in a crazy trouble, and then my life is done. I already make the decision. When I have the time to talk to my wife, I say, oh, this time I don't want to fight anymore. Because at that moment, I thought maybe it would take me like a couple years to fight for this case. And I said, I don't have that much time. I said, I talked to my wife. I said, I give up. Ask the court to deport me as soon as possible, or even I can pay for the fight. You know, in the, I feel like, no, they don't want to let me go. So as soon as they sent me to the Bergen County Jail, and then, you know, during so many hours, I talked to the other peoples at that time. They were so surprised. They said, you don't even have a 1 day in the jail. How come they deport you? You know, I don't know how to describe it. Just at that time, I just feel like I'm going to lose anything. I lose. This time, I don't have any chance to fight. So that's why I said I don't want to waste the time, because I already 45 at the time. I said, I don't have another 7 years to to fight for the case. And then, you know, I have to support the family because, and also, you know, Jimin was in the high school. It's very, you know, it's very important times for him. And also, my two daughters still in the school too, you know. So that time, Katie was in the middle school. But Kelly got a very, you know, hard time on her, you know, study because she got processing problems. So she's in the IEP program, and she needed someone to help her to finish her homework, especially me, because only me can talk to her. And then my wife, Tracy, is not that good at the homeworks. So every time I help Kelly to finish her homework or go to the IEP meeting, go to the PTA meeting. So at the time I said, oh, the kids need me and then the family need me. If I spend another couple years in the jail, then what can I do? So it's high. And also I pay all my savings for the registration, you know. So at the time I said, oh, my family, I can't work for the family, then the family, how can the family survive? So at that time I just said, oh, don't waste the time. And then I just want to finish the case and ask for the deport as soon as possible.
And how did you make the decision to fight your case?
It's I waited like almost 1 month in the Bergen County, and then they gave me a court day. Then the first time when I went to the court, and then I talked to the immigration. They have a immigration service lawyer at the time, and she heard my story, and then she asked me some information, and then she said, you still have a chance to fight. But I said, I don't want to spend another uncertain years to maybe 1 year, maybe 2 years, maybe 7 years. Because, you know, during that month, I talked to the other detainees. In my section, there's over 100 detainees there. And then, you know, some of the detainees, that they fight for their cases over 3 years. 3 years. So I so scared me, you know. I said, I don't want to.
Right, because you just don't know what would happen. I want to come back to your case, but first I wanted to just ask you about what it was like in Bergen County Jail. Being there, what were you wearing, and what was it like to all of a sudden be in jail?
We all of us would wear the jump shirt, the orange jump shirt, and then all day long you cannot, you know, wear another clothes. That's it, yeah. And then every day they give us like almost 1 hour to do exercise outdoor, but that place, I think, is a little bit bigger than this room.
Do you remember the first time your family came and visited you when you were at Bergen?
It's 1 week later.
And what was that like for them to see you there?
They have a visiting room, and then with a glass window, and then we cannot touch each other. We can only use the intercom call phone to talk. And of course, that's very sad, you know. Tracy come with all my children. And we have like 20 minutes to half hour. But during the times, they all cry. Then we don't know what he can talk. And my son cry, my daughter cries, my wife cry, and then we don't know, we just thought the worst, you know, our worst born. It's at that moment, I don't know what I can talk, and then I just say, it's going to end. Kelly is the most saddest at that time, and then she just, you know, she just can't believe you are a good father, and then why you got this, and then why. And then Captain say, oh, I hate you wearing the jump shirt. So, yeah, but it's a very, 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 very sad at that moment, yeah.
But you also worked really hard to stay in communication with your family the whole time that you were in Bergen County Jail. Would you tell us, so how long were you there, and how did you make sure to communicate as much as you could with your whole family?
I was sent to the Bergen County Jail on August 27, and then I lived there as in April, and until I left, I make the call every day with my wife, children, because I know this is the most important to let them know I'm still here, I stay good, and then that's what I can do at that time. And also, I know Tracy will face a lot of things she never got before, because she have to work, she have to take care of family, because she doesn't even sign a check before that time. She doesn't know how to take care of the bank account, credit card account, how to pay the rent, how to, you know. I went to the market to prepare all the grocery things at home for the house, for the home, for the family. So at that time, I have to tell them, oh, what's the password for this account, how to take care of the credit card. Another thing is, since I was in the detention center, Tracy had to work three jobs to get more money to support the family. Yeah.
What did keep you going? How did you find the strength to, you know, make the call to your family every day? And was there something you thought of, a hope that you had? What just kept you going?
It's, you know, the first month, I just, in my mind, I just want to, I give up. I don't want to fight. I just want to deport as soon as possible. I do all the things to prepare the deport. But after 1 month, after I talked to my lawyer, and then she gave me the hope. She let me know, oh, I still have the chance. And also she told me that it's hard for me to come back. Even my kid is a citizen, it's very hard. That means either I separate with my family. You know, either it's my family go back to China to join with me. I don't have any chance to come back with the, you know, the normal immigration wait. So at that time, and then I said, the family is so important to me. I love my kids. My family is so good. Then I said, okay. I decided to fight. Then I started to do it. And also, I received my a first letter from my daughter. She wrote, because you know, she write very good. She wrote a family picture. She wrote a family picture. Me, my wife, her brother, herself, and her sister, she drew. And then I said, okay, yeah, that's, I know that's what they want. So I said, I fight for this, fight for the families. So that's the one thing can support me. And then you can imagine 24 hours in just like 1,000 square feet and 100 people live there. So every day you do nothing. It's hard. This policy, this immigration policy, it seems it's really like a bomb to a family. It's very easily to break the family. Like my case, if I don't meet my lawyer, or my lawyer didn't explain to me so much and so details, I will just ask for deported. Then I can definitely say my family is gone, we're broke. So this immigration policy had to be changed. The standard has to be very detailed and fair. It's not just no matter what, anyone have to. So I think this is very important, yeah.
And the last question is, this radio piece is going to broadcast on a station that reaches Bergen County Jail, and we hope that people that are currently in detention right now in the same place you were can hear your interview and your story. So I wanted to ask, is there anything that you would like to say directly to people who are in detention right now?
I really want to talk to all these detainees right now, even they are in the processing on their case. Don't give up. You know, fight for your family and fight for the government to change this immigration policy, to let them hear our voice. The United States is it's united. What that is, it means is not just a certain people. So I really want them to keep going, keep fight for them. 如果你现在还是在那个移民遣返中心，我非常的建议你们不要放弃，为了你们的家庭坚持下去。我们要让这个移民当局呢去听到我们的声音，希望能够尽快把这个移民的制度给做一个改善。
Tony spent 7 months in the Bergen County Jail before he was released and reunited with his family. He was eventually able to win his immigration case. However, many are not so lucky. One of the laws affecting Tony's case was recently heard in the Supreme Court in the case Nielsen versus Priap. The question was whether people could be detained without bail at any point after receiving a criminal conviction, even years or decades later. On March 19, 2019, the Supreme Court ruled that the timing does not matter, that people can continue to be detained even decades after having committed and atoned for a crime. But all hope is not lost. People can still fight their detention on a case-by-case basis in federal court. Immigrant communities and activists have been advocating for a more humane immigration system for years. For a world without detention, without ICE, without family separation at the border. As one strategy towards this end, immigrant rights groups, through projects like the Corporate Backers of Hate campaign, have been studying and targeting the large corporations that are profiting from detention and deportation. According to their research, almost 70% of immigrants who are detained in the U.S. are in private detention centers that are owned by large corporations such as Geo Group and CoreCivic. The research also exposed how much money these companies receive from private financing sources such as Wells Fargo and Goldman Sachs. And of course, the longer people stay in detention, the greater the profit margin is for these companies. By exposing these sources, the movement is seeing some positive effects. On March 5th, 2019, JPMorgan Chase announced that they would no longer finance companies that own private prisons and immigration detention centers. Before this statement, JPMorgan was, quote, the single largest debt holder of GEO Group and CoreCivic, holding 62% more debt than the second biggest lender to the companies. This win shows the power of immigrants and activists. Thank you for listening to this episode of Melting the Ice, Derritiendo el Hielo, and our deepest gratitude to Tony Chan for sharing his story with us. To truly melt the ice, we believe that every detention story matters. If you are listening from detention right now, please let us know. We would love to hear from you and learn what information will be most useful for you. You can write to Melting the Ice, P.O. Box 202981, New Haven, Connecticut 06520. Again, that's Melting the Ice, P.O. Box 202981, New Haven, Connecticut 06520. Or you can email us at info@meltingtheice.org. Again, that's info@meltingtheice.org. Or you can visit our website at www.meltingtheice.org. This episode was produced and edited by Sylvia Ryerson with the Migrant Justice Initiative at Yale University, Daniela Ugas and Priya Srinivasan with the Immigrant Rights Clinic at NYU Law, Liz Martinez with Freedom for Immigrants, and myself, Luis Luna, with WPKN Community Radio in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Special thanks to Nancy Morowitz and Alicia Schmidt Camacho, and to our broadcast partners at WSOU 89.5 FM, the college radio station of Seton Hall University in South Orange, New Jersey, WKCR 89.9 FM, the college radio station of Columbia University in New York City, WMSC 90.3 FM, the college radio station of Montclair State University in Montclair, New Jersey, and the College Radio News Network. The music at the beginning and at the end of this show is from the album Brown is Beautiful by Olmeca. A continuación, transmitiremos todo el episodio en español. Sigan en sintonía, no se nos vayan. Bienvenidos y bienvenidas a Derritiendo el Hielo, una serie de radio bilingüe dedicada a compartir historias de cómo el sistema de inmigración está impactando a familias en todos los Estados Unidos, desarmando los mecanismos del sistema actual, quién se beneficia y compartiendo información y estrategias de cómo la gente está luchando. Esperamos que esta transmisión de radio llegue a las personas que actualmente se encuentran en los centros de detención de ICE. Si está escuchando ahora desde detención, queremos enviarle nuestros saludos especiales, nuestro amor, solidaridad y respeto. Queremos que sepan que no están solos y solas y que hay personas que luchan por usted y con usted. Nos pueden escribir a Derritiendo el Hielo, P.O. Box número 202981, New Haven, CT 06520. Otra vez, Derritiendo el Hielo, P.O. Box número 202981, New Haven, CT 06520. Nos encantaría saber si está escuchando y qué información sería la más útil para usted. Mi nombre es Luis Luna. Soy organizador, activista, productor de radio, inmigrante. Me mudé desde Ecuador a los Estados Unidos cuando tenía 13 años. Y he sido parte del movimiento de derechos para migrantes por más de una década. He visto cómo la detención y la deportación impactan a mi comunidad. Y aunque los medios de comunicación masivos en Estados Unidos se enfocan en historias de migrantes mexicanos y centroamericanos primordialmente, sabemos que la migra también ataca a comunidades en todo el mundo, no solo las comunidades latinas. En este episodio vamos a compartir la historia de Tony Chen. Tony es un gerente de restaurante de Nueva York. Es padre de tres jóvenes neoyorquinos, es esposo y miembro querido de nuestra comunidad. Tony nació en China y es residente permanente. Significa que tiene una green card. Pero hace unos años, Tony fue separado de toda su familia por algo que él había hecho hace muchos años. Una madrugada, en el verano del 2015, 7 años después de haber cometido un delito financiero no violento y poco después de completar un periodo de 5 años de libertad condicional, oficiales de inmigración repentinamente llegaron a la casa de Tony. Lo sacaron, lo separaron de su familia y lo llevaron a un centro de detención del condado de Bergen en Hackensack, New Jersey, y le abrieron un caso de deportación. Tony no pudo creer que un crimen por el cual ya había pagado, un crimen por el cual no recibió una sentencia de cárcel, fuese la razón por la cual estaba en detención, lejos de su familia. En un minuto compartiré la historia de Tony traducida al español. Pero primero quiero compartir un historial, porque la historia de Tony no es única. Lo que pasó con Tony tiene que ver con las leyes de migración que fueron aprobadas en 1996, bajo la administración de Clinton. Estas leyes cambiaron radicalmente el sistema de inmigración de los Estados Unidos. La ley de inmigración de 1996, nombrada la Acta de Reforma de Inmigración Ilegal, o IRA-IRA por sus siglas en inglés, resultó que más gente fuera detenida y deportada. Antes de 1996, inmigrantes documentados que hayan sido condenados por ciertos delitos podrían ser deportados. Pero bajo las nuevas leyes, el Congreso estadounidense amplió la definición de un delito agravado, que hace que uno sea elegible para la deportación. Y estos cambios afectaron casos de manera retroactiva. De repente, personas que habían terminado su sentencia por un delito cometido años o incluso décadas antes, incluyendo a personas que nunca habían recibido una sentencia de prisión, ahora podían ser deportados. En pocas palabras, estas leyes han tenido el efecto de hacer que la detención y la deportación sea una penalización adicional para migrantes que hayan tenido contacto con el sistema de justicia penal. Activistas y expertos legales dicen que las leyes de 1996 han resultado en la expansión de nuestro sistema de crimigración, un sistema que, con el aumento de prisiones en Estados Unidos, ha explotado el número de personas encarceladas. Este nuevo sistema también permite que las agencias de policía apliquen las leyes de inmigración federal, completamente mezclando estos dos sistemas, nuestro sistema migratorio y nuestro sistema criminal, en maneras nuevas sin precedentes. Pero, a pesar de esta conexión, la deportación es un procedimiento civil, no penal. Esto significa que las personas detenidas en centros de detención no tienen derecho a un abogado gratuito, y en la mayoría de los casos no pueden pagar una fianza para salir de detención. Tampoco se les da una sentencia, más bien son detenidos, principalmente en cárceles y prisiones, y la mayoría tienen que permanecer allí durante meses o incluso años, mientras luchan contra sus casos de deportación. No siempre era así. Antes de las leyes de 1996, la deportación era relativamente poco común, pero lo que antes era extremo, ahora es rutinario. En 1996, antes de que Ira Ira fuera aprobada, los Estados Unidos deportó a 70,000 migrantes. Después de esta ley, esa cifra rápidamente se quintuplicó, aumentando a más de 400,000 en solo el 2012, bajo la administración de Obama. Para Tony, estas leyes fueron activadas cuando, después de completar su periodo de libertad condicional, viajó a Canadá para ir a la graduación de su sobrino. Fue este viaje, salir de los Estados Unidos y volver a entrar, lo que causó que agentes de la migra llegaran a su casa. Una vez que Tony estaba detenido en Bergen County Jail, él tuvo que tomar una decisión imposible. Quedarse en detención por tiempo indefinido, quizás por años, mientras peleaba su caso de migración, sin poder trabajar ni proveer para su familia. O tomar una orden de deportación, dejando atrás a su esposa y tres hijos en los Estados Unidos. Esta es la decisión imposible que miles de familias tienen que confrontar en los Estados Unidos todos los días. Aquí traduzco la historia de Tony como él lo dijo con sus propias palabras.
My name is Ken Wen Chen, and also called Tony Lee Chen.
Mi nombre es Tony Chen. Vivo en Brooklyn, New York. Nací en Guangzhou, China, en 1969. Vine a los Estados Unidos en 1999 cuando tenía 28 años. He vivido en Estados Unidos alrededor de 20 años. Tengo tres hijos y mi esposa se llama Tracy Chen. Trabaja como asistente de maestro. Fui arrestado en el 2008. Me declaré culpable y mi sentencia fue de 5 años de libertad condicional y pago de restitución. Terminé la libertad condicional bajo buen estado. El caso tomó 7 años. Mi libertad condicional finalizó en el 2015 y luego pensé, soy libre. Después, el 26 de agosto, a las 6 de la mañana, un par de policías golpearon mi puerta. No abrí, pero entre ella preguntaron, «Oh, señor Chen, ¿tiene un auto?» Dije que sí. Ellos dijeron, «¿Cuál es su auto?» Al principio dijeron que eran policías y me pregunté, «No sé, tal vez están haciendo trabajo policial». Entonces abrí la puerta. Dije, «Mi auto está ahí». Entonces dijeron que eran la migra. «Le vamos a arrestar». En ese momento pensé, «Por Dios». Después de ir al 26 Federal Plaza, me preguntaron que firme unos papeles. Después de firmar, me dijeron, te vamos a deportar. Me dijeron que en ese momento puedes contratar un abogado. Sin embargo, te vamos a enviar a un centro de detención. Al 1000%, nunca me imaginé que esto pasaría. Pensé que no tenía probabilidad de luchar. Tenía 45 años. Pensé que no tengo otros 7 años para luchar por mi caso. Tengo que sostener a mi familia. En ese momento, solo quería que mi caso termine y poder pedir ser deportado lo antes posible. Esperé casi un mes en el condado de Bergen y me dieron una fecha en la corte. En la primera cita, hablé con una abogada de inmigración. Ella escuchó mi historia, me preguntó varias cosas y me dijo que tenía chance de pelear. Le dije que no quería pasar una cantidad de tiempo incierto en la cárcel. Durante ese mes, había más de 100 detenidos. Algunos estaban luchando su caso bajo detención por más de 3 años. ¡Tres años! Una semana después, mi familia vino a visitarme. El centro tenía una ventana de vidrio. No nos pudimos tocar. Tracy vino con todos mis hijos. Tuvimos solamente entre 20 y 30 minutos. Durante ese tiempo, todos estaban llorando. Mi hijo lloraba, mi hija lloraba, mi esposa lloraba. No sabíamos de qué hablar. Mi hija Kelly era la más triste durante ese tiempo. Ella no podía creer. Me dijo, «Tú eres un gran papá. ¿Por qué está pasando esto?» Fue un momento muy, muy triste. El primer mes en detención, solo quería rendirme. Después de un mes, hablé con mi abogada. Me dejó saber que todavía tenía esperanza. Me dijo que sería difícil regresar a los Estados Unidos, aunque mis hijos son ciudadanos. En ese momento, pensé que mi familia es lo más importante para mí. Amo a mis hijos. Decidí pelear. Fue en ese momento cuando recibí la primera carta de mi hija. Me hizo un dibujo de la familia y dije, ok, sé lo que quieren. Y luché por mi familia. La política de migración es como una bomba para una familia. En mi caso, si no hubiera conocido a mi abogada, hubiese pedido ser deportado. Hubiese dicho que mi familia fue perdida. Esta política de migración debe cambiar. Tiene que ser justa. Pienso que es muy importante. En este momento, quiero hablar con todos y todas en detención. No se rindan. Luchen por sus familias. Luchen para que el gobierno cambie esta política migratoria, para que escuchen su voz. Los Estados Unidos están unidos. No es solo para cierta gente. Quiero que sigan luchando. Tony estuvo 7 meses en la cárcel de Bergen County antes de ser liberado y poder reunirse con su familia. Eventualmente, pudo ganar su caso de inmigración. Sin embargo, muchos no son tan afortunados. Una de esas leyes afectando el caso de Tony fue recientemente escuchada en la Corte Suprema de Justicia en el caso Nielsen versus Preap. La pregunta era si las personas podrían ser detenidas sin fianza en algún momento después de recibir una condena penal, incluso años o décadas después. En marzo 19, 2019, la Corte Suprema dictaminó que el momento no importa, que las personas pueden continuar siendo detenidas incluso décadas después de haber cometido y expiado por un delito. Pero no toda la esperanza se ha perdido. Las personas aún pueden luchar contra su detención, caso por caso, en un tribunal federal. Las comunidades migrantes y activistas han estado abogando por un sistema de inmigración más humano durante años. Como una estrategia hacia este fin, grupos de derechos de los inmigrantes a través de proyectos como Corporate Backers of Hate han estado estudiando y apuntando a las grandes corporaciones que se benefician de la detención y la deportación. De acuerdo con su investigación, casi el 70% de inmigrantes quienes están detenidos en los Estados Unidos están en centros de detención privados, centros que son propiedad de grandes empresas como GEO Group y CoreCivic. Su investigación también expuso cuánto dinero recibieron esas empresas de fuentes de financiamiento privadas como Wells Fargo y Goldman Sachs. Y por supuesto, cuanto más tiempo permanezcan detenidos y detenidas, mayor será el margen de ganancias para estas empresas. Al exponer estas fuentes, el movimiento está viendo algunos cambios positivos. En marzo 5 de 2019, el banco JP Morgan Chase anunció que ya no financiará a las empresas que poseen prisiones privadas y centros de detención de migrantes. Antes de esta declaración, JP Morgan fue, entre comillas, el mayor titular de deuda de GEO Group y CoreCivic, con un 62% más de deuda que el segundo prestamista más grande a dichas empresas. Esta victoria nos demuestra el poder de los migrantes y activistas. Para aprender más sobre esta campaña, pueden visitar www.backersofhate.org. Gracias por escuchar este episodio de Derretiendo el Hielo, Melting the Ice. Y nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a Tony Chen por compartir su historia con nosotros. Para derretir verdaderamente el hielo, creemos que cada historia de detención es importante. Si está escuchando desde detención en este momento, háganoslo saber. Nos encantaría escuchar de usted y qué información sería más útil para usted. Pueden escribir a Derritiendo el Hielo, P.O. Box 202981, New Haven, Connecticut 06520. Otra vez, Derritiendo el Hielo, P.O. Box 202981, New Haven, CT 06520. O nos pueden escribir un correo electrónico a info@meltingtheice.org. Otra vez, info@derritiendoelhielo.org. O visite nuestro sitio web www.derritiendoelhielo.org. Este episodio fue producido y editado por Sylvia Ryerson con la Iniciativa de Justicia Migrante de la Universidad de Yale, Daniela Ugaz y Priya Srinivasan con la Clínica de Derechos de Migrantes de la Escuela de Derecho de la Universidad de Nueva York, Liz Martínez con Libertad para Migrantes, y yo, Luis Luna, con WPKN 89.5 FM Radio Comunitaria en Bridgeport, Connecticut. Gracias especiales a Nancy Morawetz y Alicia Schmidt Camacho, y a nuestra emisora de radio asociada, WKCR 89.5 FM, Estación Universitaria de la Universidad de Columbia en la Ciudad de Nueva York. WSOU 89.5 FM, Estación Universitaria de la Universidad de Seton Hall en South Orange, New Jersey. WMSC 90.3 FM, Estación Universitaria de la Universidad Estatal de Montclair en Montclair, New Jersey. Y a la Red de Noticias de Radio Universitaria. La música que escuchaste al principio y al final de este episodio fue del álbum Brown is Beautiful de Olmeca.
Out. We make rhymes right. Keep it tight, natural to me like swinging first when they wanna fight. We got rights to win, never losing sight. Salute stripes, yeah, only when we make strikes. We ain't becoming scapegoats, Jeremiah right. Nowhere else to go, kids, they ain't no more flights. Browning of America. Browning of America.